I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about efforts in Indiana to make the state more inclusive and encouraging to Hoosiers with disabilities. We will discuss challenges and we will talk about benefits. My guests are Christine Dahlberg, Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities, Emily Munson, a Governor's Council spokesperson, and John Barth from Managed Health Services. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about efforts in Indiana to make the state more inclusive and encouraging for people with disabilities. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Christine Dahlberg. She is Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Emily Munson, who is a Governor's Council spokesperson and has other roles as well. We'll talk about that. And John Barth from Managed Health Services. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So let's start this conversation by really talking about what some of the challenges and or barriers are toward inclusion for people with disabilities here in Indiana. I think, Emily, it's probably appropriate to start that conversation with you since you live the life, right?
Sure. I have spinal muscular atrophy, which weakens my muscles progressively, so I use a wheelchair. And for me, the biggest barriers I've experienced are that a lot of people tend to think the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, was passed in 1990, so everything is good now. compliance has been met. But when you look at the individual titles of the act, progress really hasn't been met. For example, Title I is to encourage employers to hire people with disabilities. And employment is a huge barrier. Many people with disabilities are living at poverty level. And I think probably the biggest barrier in terms of getting employment is a lack of transportation options, especially in a state that has as many rural communities as Indiana does.
Christine, how does Indiana stack up in terms of other states around the country?
It depends on what part of Indiana you're talking about and on what topic. We do really well on some things. We're about average on employment of people with disabilities, for example, but that's a horrible average. It's like only about 37% of people with disabilities are employed compared to the general population. And it's a huge issue for Indiana economically to have people that aren't working who would like to work and who can work. And it's also a huge barrier for people with disabilities to have the kind of life they want to lead, participating in the community, you know, enjoying social activities in life. All of those things depend at least partly on having some income, as well as Emily said, transportation is a big issue. And so, you know, this is March, which is Disability Awareness Month in Indiana. And, you know, one of the things we do every March is put out a campaign to try to make people think more about their attitudes toward people with disabilities and toward some of the barriers that might be in their communities that could be addressed. Attitudinal barriers are a huge issue for many people because they just feel uncomfortable. They don't know how to treat people with disabilities. And essentially the answer to that question is, how do you want to be treated? People want to be treated just like everyone else. So those are some of the kinds of things that I've encountered in working throughout the state.
How many Hoosiers meet, do we consider to be people with disabilities? Do we have a number on that? Christine, Emily, either one of you?
It's almost 20%.
Almost 20% of the state?
Mm-hmm.
In the states. So we're talking close to a million people then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, quite
more.
A few people. Or and that's than... children and adults. And it includes some people who, like seniors, who might not label themselves as having a disability, but they do have physical or cognitive limitations, and so they would fall under that category as well.
John, I guess I'm probably have been remiss. We probably ought to talk about what the definitions are of disabilities here, what the framework is for considering who these people are with disabilities.
It depends on a couple of different factors. Like, for example, at MHS, one of the things we do is serve the Indiana Medicaid program. So we have three products that we serve through Indiana Medicaid: Hoosier HealthWise, which is largely moms and kids; Hoosier Care Connect, which is oriented towards people with disabilities; and then the Healthy Indiana Plan. But the thing to remember is, just because Hoosier Care Connect is a program intended to specifically serve people with disabilities, that's actually a pretty small universe. There are people with disabilities throughout all those programs. So how you define someone, just like Christine was saying, mm-hmm. if they have some official designation of disability, that's not necessarily the right way to measure it, because there's all kinds of impairments that people are overcoming on a day-to-day basis.
Is there a legal definition for this?
There are many legal definitions.
Okay.
Probably the most common one is the Americans with Disabilities Act definition, mm-hmm. which essentially says that if you have a significant impairment in one life activity, you could be considered a person with a disability. Is that
accurate, Emily?
Yeah,
Christine
Emily,
is looking in your
this.
Direction.
She's
yeah.
looking at me.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. And it is difficult in that disability is identified and defined differently in different laws. For example, the term developmental disability is defined differently federally than it is within the state of Indiana. So it's a jumble. And if you want to define disability in a specific context, you've got to go to different statutes.
What's the difference in the definitions between the federal and the state?
Under the state definition, a developmental disability has to involve some type of cognitive or intellectual disability, whereas in the federal definition, it's just having a disability before the age of 22 and limitations in three different enumerated areas.
Seems to me we probably ought to talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, and how effective it has been. Emily alluded to that early on. And I want to talk more about, I think everybody at one point or another has made reference to the attitudinal challenges here in the state. I think that's a whole large topic that I want to get to in just a bit. We're going to talk specifically about what the ADA tried to do and what it did do. Christine, I'll start with you on that.
It essentially tried to level the playing field for people with disabilities by making sure that no matter what type of disability you have, intellectual, physical, sensory, hearing, sight, whatever, you would have equal opportunity to participate in public events and activities, as far as government kinds of functions, community functions, and businesses, able to get into stores and shop and spend your money and enjoy walking in the parks and everything that everyone else gets to do. Those are the two parts of the ADA that I think have done the best. Mm-hmm. There's been huge changes, especially the physical changes that have made it really much easier for people to get around. It's still not perfect by any means, but I would say, in my opinion anyhow, that those areas are the probably where the ADA has had the most impact. And employment, as Emily said, being the one where it has been the least impact. There has virtually been insignificant change, depending on what statistics you look at.
John, what areas or gaps did the ADA leave that we're still dealing with today?
Well, it's interesting because in a previous job, I worked at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community at Indiana University. And one of the jobs I had was to work with a committee that was working to ensure the ADA was being implemented across Indiana consistently. And we had multiple different projects. Like, for example, we reached out to every municipality in Indiana to make sure they understood that, like, voting centers needed to be accessible, especially when voting centers may be in a historic school or an old building. And the people who ran them might not ever occur to them, like, oh, we need to ensure that this building is accessible so everybody can get in to vote and there's no barriers to vote. So I think one of the things that hasn't always been covered is these day-to-day civic activities. Although there's been a lot of improvements noted, as Emily and Christina have said, there are things where people have just accepted this is the building where we do this, and they haven't thought, oh, just the very structure of this building might be unattractive to someone who has a mobility impairment. So making sure those awareness issues are out there and they're top of mind and they're part of everyone's day-to-day life, I think is a big change that's happened and needs to continue to happen.
My memory of that period also was that, you know, in the rush to get into compliance with ADA, there were a lot of people who suddenly thought, okay, all I really need to do is put up a ramp over some stairs and everything is going to be fine. And that was, Christine's already looking at me. I'm not saying that was the right interpretation, mind you. I'm saying, yeah, but they didn't care, you know. I mean, my understanding of the ADA is that those ramps had to be at certain specifications because you would see some that were at like 45-degree tilts or whatever that would be almost impossible to get anything up, and others that, you know, I think if an ant had tried to crawl across it, the thing would have collapsed under it. So, you know, in that rush to comply, did people miss some of the spirit of what ADA was trying to accomplish? I'll start with Emily on that one.
I was 5 and 6.
You're a youngster. Yeah, I know.
So
rub it in. Go ahead.
I don't necessarily remember the rush directly after the ADA was passed, but I know that a huge issue is that even though people might have tried to comply, I think that a lot of businesses have not fully accepted the spirit of the ADA, if you will. I know it was very frustrating to me back when RFRA was an issue in Indiana, and a lot of businesses would put up stickers that said, "We serve everyone." And some of them were not accessible at all to people in wheelchairs. Like the Indy 11, for example, had a banner in their Brickyard Battalion box that said, "We support everyone." And no wheelchairs could sit in that section of the soccer field or the stadium. So that's been frustrating. And it really concerns me that in rejecting the spirit of the ADA, that particularly the mall lobby, the shopping mall lobby, has pushed to basically make Title III of the ADA, which is the ability to get access into public buildings, they're trying to make that ineffective. And federally, the House passed H.R. 640, or 620, which would basically mean that as long as a business could show they were making compliance toward accessibility, there's no right to enforce ADA rights.
We are talking about efforts here in the state to make the state more inclusive and encouraging for people with disabilities. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Christine Dahlberg. She is Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Emily Munson, who is a Governor's Council spokesperson and a member of the Leadership Board. And John Barth from Managed Health Services. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about challenges, opportunities, barriers for people with disabilities here in Indiana. This is Disability Awareness Month in Indiana, March is. And if you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Christine Dahlberg. She is Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities, Emily Munson, who is a Governor's Council spokesperson, and John Barth from Managed Health Services. So we've talked a little bit about sort of the world we live in, this post-ADA world we live in, and the fact that there have been some gaps in the perception of how what it has done and what it hasn't done, and also I think it was Emily who made the point right at the top that people thought, okay, ADA is a fact, and that solved every problem, when in fact there still are problems out there. I'm going to take it around the horn. I'm going to start with John because I picked on Emily and Christine the most in the last segment. I'll try to even it up a little bit here. John, in your part of the world, what are the biggest challenges that face, either people with disabilities or those who are trying to support and help people with disabilities?
Sure. Well, let me talk about one thing in specific, and Christine mentioned this earlier. One of the biggest barriers that people with disabilities face in a really unappealing statistic is the number of people with disabilities who want employment but are not able to achieve it. And that's why we're really excited to support something that the ARC of Indiana mm-hmm. is doing. So the ARC is doing something extremely innovative in Delaware County in Muncie, where they actually own and operate a Courtyard Hotel. And a part of that mm-hmm. hotel is the Green Training Institute, and that's a place where people with disabilities go for a period of time and actually live in the hotel and receive training, and they leave that facility job ready to go into the hospitality industry. And so we just loved that program, a real pathway to ensure people with disabilities can find a job, and we wanted to see how we could support it. And so what we're doing is a 5-year commitment to the ARC to support the training institute, so the folks who are the students who are getting the training at the Green Training Institute also have opportunities in the community. So what we're doing is supporting 3 mentor programs around fitness, community engagement, and tutoring, where Ball State students work with the students at the Green Training Institute there in Muncie, and then when the students come out of that program, they're job ready and they get support to find employment. So something that I think that's really important, not only in Indiana but across the nation, is finding pathways for people with disabilities to be employed, and this is something that MHS is doing to really try to help overcome that barrier.
Christine, same question. In your part of the world, what are the biggest challenges or problems that confront people with disabilities?
Well, I'd have to agree with the employment issue, of course, but I still think that attitudes are the biggest barrier that people have. And if it could be the,
those two are tied.
They tie, yeah. Yes. The attitude of an employer as to whether a person could or couldn't do certain aspects of a job, and they're afraid to ask because they don't know how to interview and what's permitted or not permitted, even though that information is easily available and for free, and you can get advice, and everybody should know about it. A lot of HR departments just are not really comfortable in interviewing someone with a disability. And conversely, when people with disabilities try to access government services or try to access community services of any kind, you know, people think if they have physical access to a building, that that's all they need to do. They don't think about, are there materials accessible for someone who's low vision? What do they do if someone who's deaf comes in and wants to apply for a driver's license? What happens when somebody who doesn't read very well wants to take a driver's test? There's a lot of other aspects that are covered by the ADA, but a lot of people don't think about much besides the actual changing the physical environment.
Yeah, which it was the, you know, all I've got to do is put a ramp up and I've right. complied here. Thing that we talked about, I think, and I want to talk about the attitudinal piece, but you're touching on something really important here too, which I think we've kind of talked around. Everybody's sort of understood it, but it is this, you know, misunderstanding of what the ADA did and how sweeping in some ways it was, because it was about much more than physical surroundings. And that is a point I think we need to drive home, is that in many ways we're still not in compliance with the ADA, right?
That's
correctly.
Right. And as with any law, you're never going to have 100% compliance, but certainly there's a ways we need to go before we have a reasonable level of understanding in the general public that service dogs are permitted, for example, that that they do have a responsibility for communication, effective communication, just all kinds of different things. But and at some point, I'd like to go back and talk a little bit more about attitude issues, because I honestly think that regardless of federal law or state law or civil rights law of any kind, if you have a positive attitude about what can you do to make sure everybody has a chance to participate, that goes a long way to solving problems, whether they are covered or not covered by the letter of the law. It's the spirit of what's right and what we should all expect and be able to want from our businesses, our communities.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the attitudinal issue. I do want to give Emily, though, a chance to have the last word on this, you know, this biggest problem or biggest challenges in your part of the world, confronting people with disabilities or those who are trying to support them.
I would concur with what Christine and John have said in regard to the nexus between employment and attitude. Mm-hmm. It boggles my mind that in 2018 it's still legal to pay some people with disabilities less than minimum wage for jobs that they do. Completely legal under the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Yeah, it's not like you need less food than anybody else or less air, or, you know, the cost of gasoline is any cheaper for you than it is for the rest of us, right?
No, and there are some people in Indiana literally making one penny per hour for the work that they do.
How is that legal? I'm looking at Christine just because she made the mistake of looking at me.
There was a law that was passed at the federal level that allows people with disabilities to be paid for piecework. Mm-hmm. And so supposedly they test the job against what a typical person could do and putting widgets into bags or whatever it would be, and they pay a person with a disability a percentage of that, depending on how many widgets they can put in the bag, as opposed to someone who has doesn't have a disability. Well, that has been, in many ways, that has been, that was the idea, is to give somebody a job, and because they couldn't do it at the level that a typical person could be, we can pay them less. And it hasn't really worked out that way. The tests that they do are not done very well. And to be honest, if somebody can't achieve at a typical person's level, in my mind, that just means they have a really bad job match. You put somebody that has limited hand movement, for example, putting widgets in bags, of course they're not going to do very well. So mm-hmm. let's get them a job that suits their talents rather than a job that they really can't do adequately. We all have things we're bad at. I certainly do. Mm-hmm. Things that I would never even try to get employed doing because I know it mm-hmm. doesn't suit my talents. So if that kind of gives you at least a general mm-hmm. understanding of how that happens, but it's a bad law. And there have been a lot of efforts to change it. And I think it'll happen, not next year, but maybe in the next 5 years.
Go ahead, Emily.
I was going to add that. So like Christine alluded to, the Fair Labor Standards Act permits this subminimum wage. Some states have actually outlawed it and said, or not fault, well, made amendments to their state statutes that say every person being employed in X state must make at least minimum wage. Indiana actually has a special exception permitting subminimum wage work, saying that if a nonprofit provider is paying people subminimum wage, that's fine. So it is permissible at the federal level, but our state has also fully embraced that mechanism of payment.
We are talking about challenges and opportunities facing people with disabilities in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Andy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Andy, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm basically I'm a 62-year-old man, basically unemployable with multiple disabilities. And I want to say that, first of all, the medical help that the state of Indiana gives is fantastic. And without them, I probably wouldn't be alive today. But on the other hand, the financial help that the state of Indiana gives me runs out about the 15th of the month. And it makes it really tough to live. Mm-hmm. And that's my comment.
Well, thank you very much for calling and sharing that, Andy. We will take the subject up now. Thanks very much. So let's deal with the medical piece first. Are the medical services that are available to people with disabilities here in Indiana adequate to their needs, as Andy says? I'll start with John on that one.
Yeah, sure. I'm excited to talk about this because when I used to work for the state of Indiana, I started a program called Medicaid Select. It's subsequently morphed several times under other people's leadership and become Hoosier Care Connect, which I now administer as one of the health plans that serves the program. And as I mentioned earlier, that is a program that is a Medicaid program that's specifically tailored towards people with disabilities, although people with disabilities are on all varieties of Medicaid. And we're fortunate in Indiana that the state offers a pretty broad and meaningful substantive benefit, not only for people with disabilities, but people who access their care through the Medicaid program in general. So I'm glad to hear the caller's comment that he feels his medical needs are being addressed by the program. I know that's the intent of the state Medicaid agency, and it's certainly our intent at MHS. So, yeah, on the medical side, I think the state is doing an extremely good job.
Christine and Emily, I'm going to give you the second piece of that. The financial support for someone who, it sounds like his situation's fairly dire, that he's not employable, that there are multiple disabilities.
I'm assuming, you know, without knowing for sure, that he's either receiving some type of Social Security, which is a federal income support, not a state one. And so he's either getting Social Security disability or he's getting supplemental security income, which is like $800 a month, I think, and the SSDI, which is Social Security Disability, the amount of that depends on how many years you've worked and how much you've made, or, you know, a lot of other factors. So that can be a lot higher. But regardless of that, if you're looking at SSI, which is what a lot of people who have had lifelong disabilities are looking at if they don't work, and they're getting $800 a month.
Yeah, that's $9,600 a year.
That's
well below the poverty level.
It's not enough to pay for a small one-bedroom or even efficiency apartment. I mean, it's basically that's about what an efficiency apartment costs. So then there's all your other needs and all your other expenses. So, yeah, it is very difficult to live, at least on your own, with that type of income.
Emily, your thoughts?
We've talked about difficulties. I would say that one thing Indiana does fantastically, better than other states, is has developed a great Medicaid buy-in program. And this is an incentive, actually, to help people with disabilities who can work but still need a level of care too expensive to be paid out of pocket. So in Indiana, an individual on MedWorks, which is the Medicaid buy-in program, can earn more than $80,000 a year and retain full Medicaid benefits.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
$80,000 a year.
More than 80 grand a year, yep.
Okay.
But it's not free.
No.
You pay a premium just like you would with private insurance.
Right.
But because Medicaid does pay for things like attendant care services, which an ordinary insurance policy wouldn't pay for, it allows people with that need a lot more physical assistance to still be able to get what they need and work.
Are there other gaps? I mean, it does sound like this financial support for people who are, you know, not able to work at any consistent level is a significant problem. Are there other gaps in the system that create difficulties? I'll start with Emily on that one.
I think part of the gaps for people on the physical disability side is that there really is not a good pool of personal care attendants. For example, I need help getting in and out of bed, getting dressed, toileting, bathing, basically every activity of daily living. And I cannot find people willing to come and get me up in the morning in time to go to work at the rate the state pays those attendants. A lot of other states have a personal-directed program, consumer-directed care, they call it, in which the person with a disability can hire and fire their own caregiver. And Indiana only permits that through the aged and disabled waiver and only for attendant care. And I think Christine, in particular, can speak to the difficulties of attendant care being divided between the Family and Social Services Administration and the Department of Health.
Okay, sounds like we have got more to talk about. We're talking about the challenges and opportunities confronting people with disabilities here in Indiana. My guests are Christine Dahlberg. She is Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities. Emily Munson is Governor's Council spokesperson, and John Barth from Managed Health Services. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the challenges and opportunities that people with disabilities in Indiana face and the state's efforts to make Indiana a more inclusive and encouraging place for people with disabilities. March is Disability Awareness Month here in the state. If you want to join the conversation, what you can do is call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Don has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Don's going to present his question here to Christine Dahlberg, who's Executive Director of the Indiana Governor's Council for People with Disabilities, Emily Munson, who is a Governor's Council spokesperson, and John Barth from Managed Health Services. The reason I'm bringing Don's question to the forefront here is because I think it touches on that attitudinal issue and challenge that we've talked about. Don writes, I'd be interested to know if your guests would agree, but I believe one of the biggest obstacles for those with physical disabilities is more than lack of ADA-compliant infrastructure, but it is lack of pedestrian infrastructure itself. In my Donut County community, there was a time when one rarely saw wheelchairs or mobility scooters out and about, and if you did, they were dangerously in a road or state highway or on a gravel shoulder. Now, thanks to many more sidewalks and trails, we see people with disabilities getting themselves to where they want to be, the most basic of human functions. Too many unincorporated areas of our counties pay little or no attention to pedestrian infrastructure along thoroughfares. What can we do to change this? I'll start with Christine, or go ahead, John. You look like you were leaping in there.
Well, yeah, you happened to hit upon an issue I'm really passionate about, both when I worked at the Indiana Institute on Disability and Community at IU, and when I previously served as a member of the Indianapolis City County Council. This is something I focused on. And Maggie Lewis, former council president, and I worked together to pass a proposal that's called Complete Streets. And the intent of it was that every time the city makes an infrastructure decision, it has to do that with all the users in mind. So it becomes an issue. It's not just people with disabilities you're organizing the streets around and the sidewalks around and the parks around. It's for all the users. So if you start thinking about the use of a park, say, and you start thinking, oh, well, we need to make sure dads and moms who are pushing a stroller have a pathway to get into the park. And we need to think that senior citizens who may be using a cane or some other adaptive device need access. But then naturally, people with disabilities who have different needs, all of those needs. So why not start thinking about the use of the physical structure for everyone, and then no one is left out? And so that's actually a proposal that got passed by the City County Council a few years ago. It'll take quite a few years for those changes to come as those design standards come into effect with each new project. But that's the kind of thing that has to happen from the government perspective, is making sure that these changes are institutionalized so they're just sort of second nature when projects get done. Everyone's needs are considered.
And that's, I think, we're ready to talk about the attitudinal piece here, because that's the biggest thing and the hardest thing, I think, ultimately. To change. We've done stories before on the shows before on the challenges people with disabilities face in Indianapolis and in Indiana and in America. On one of those shows, it must have been 3-4 years ago, one of the guests said something that has stuck with me ever since. So the problem really is invisibility. For whatever reason, too many people just do not see people with disabilities, don't see them as people who are deserving of opportunities or are deserving of any kind of intention or inclusion, and they don't mean it, this person said, mean-spiritedly. They just literally don't see them. They look past them in ways that are incredibly damaging. I guess I would like to say, Emily, what you said at the top when you talked about the importance of transportation, many of the arguments we have heard about, ramping up mass transit here in central Indiana have been about its economic development implications. But in some ways, the argument you're making is it's also a civil rights issue, that you cannot access fully the benefits of life without something like this in place. But we don't necessarily hear that being advanced, your needs being advanced as part of that argument. Could you speak to that a little bit?
When I was in college, I lived for a semester in Washington, D.C. And obviously they have the metro out there, and it was amazing how I could get absolutely anywhere I wanted to. And I gained a lot of independence as a result of that opportunity. And when I came back to Indiana, and I was in college at Hanover, so down in Madison, there
I'll try not to hold that against you.
Absolutely.
Franklin and Hanover have a huge rivalry for the uninitiated here.
Absolutely nothing. Like, I felt so trapped. And I do think that the disability transportation issue could be framed economically. You mentioned that people are talking about it in terms of finances, but if more people with disabilities have the opportunity to get transported to a job, then they become economically more powerful. And with money, I think, comes the opportunity to have a louder voice in what you spend your money on and how you make decisions and what businesses you support. So I think if people with disabilities had the opportunity to have mass transit, not a bus, buses are horrible, but an actual light rail, there would be great economic potential, and that would incorporate unleashing economic power for people with disabilities.
Christine, I'd like your thoughts on that whole question of invisibility, because when we talk about inclusiveness as a society, we most often think about race, we think about gender, we may think about sexual orientation or religious faith, but people with disabilities all too often become part of that conversation only as an afterthought.
Right, and they should be part of that conversation. Just as important to talk about disability inclusion as it is to talk about racial, ethnic, LGBTQ. Mm-hmm. All of those issues are they're all our sisters and brothers that are fighting for civil rights. And I think when you look at the invisibility thing, you can think about it two ways. One, people are uncomfortable interacting with people with disabilities sometimes, not all, but a lot of the older people and people in businesses. So they try not to catch your eye. They don't want to see that you have a cane. They don't want to even they don't want to look at you because they're afraid that something might happen. They might say something wrong, or you might want something that they don't want to give you. So that's, I think, the invisibility your guest was talking about, probably. More being ignored than being invisible. And then there's the invisibility of people, of a large majority of people with disabilities, who, when you look at them, you can't tell they have any disability at all. They have an invisible disability. And so when someone like that, say, has an accessible parking pass and parks in the accessible, and then everybody gets upset because they think that person looks like they could easily walk 10 blocks. Mm-hmm. But they don't know they have a heart condition, or they don't know they have a breathing problem. So there's the invisible disabilities, mental health, and a lot mm-hmm. of physical, a lot of health disabilities are not visible. And then there's the issue, I think, of people just ignoring people because they just don't know how to interact. And that's one of the things that our March Awareness Month campaign tries to address is making people more comfortable interacting with people with disabilities. That, you know, just relax and be yourself. Don't worry too much about what you say. If you talk to someone who's blind and you say, mm-hmm. I'll see you later, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the kind of thing. And I think it's probably going to be less a problem as a new generation of children who have all grown up together in the same yeah. schools and same classrooms grow up. It'll be a little more, it'll be easier as a society to see those changes.
Well, and I think the thing that struck me about this, and I'll bring John into the conversation here too, is part of it, you know, if 20% of the state, 20% of the people in Indiana are people with disabilities, I can't think of too many other political circumstances in which a demographic or a potential voting bloc that large would not be courted specifically, but you don't see that. Emily is smiling right now. You don't see that happening. And, you know, that's the other piece, I think, that the guest was alluding to is, you know, the numbers ought to provide some leverage, but in some ways it actually works in the opposite. Anyhow, Emily, you were about ready to say something, and I blathered on and cut you off. So,
oh, no. I've tried to do some organizing efforts in central Indiana to do things like get people to pass a visitability ordinance in Indiana, meaning that every new residence that is built, we need to have one accessible entrance and accessible bathroom, for example. So it doesn't damage the house. It makes it more accessible to everyone. Or trying to get a group together to advocate for the advancement of consumer-directed care. And it seems like the disability community in central Indiana is really afraid to bite the hand that feeds, if you will. They're worried that there will be backlash and they will lose important benefits somehow.
So I'm going to toss this out to everybody. I'll start with John on it. This attitudinal challenge that we've got, what do we do about it? What are the solutions? I'll start with John, then go to Christine, and then come to Emily last and let her have the last word. John, your thoughts.
To me, there's a couple things. And one of the first is kind of going back to what I was talking about at the beginning. And it's that the more we ensure that people with disabilities have access to the same opportunities as anyone else, and you start seeing folks sort of in employment working with everyone else side by side, that's when attitudes start to change. And I think some of the discussions Emily pointed out earlier, some of the allowances that still happen in Indiana with some of the sheltered workshops and so on. So once we started sort of realizing that employers, instead of looking at a candidate and seeing someone with a disability, they should start looking at the person and their ability to do the job and how can they reformulate the job to take advantage of that person's skills and abilities, and then that's when things start to happen. So really focusing, I think, attention on employment and what we can do to ensure similar access to everyone else. And I'll go back again to the great work that the ARC is doing up in Delaware County, where they actually own and operate a hotel that is training folks with disabilities to be job ready and to work in the hospitality industry. And anybody who's interested in that can go to arcind.org to learn more, because that's a pretty impressive thing they're doing in possibly a model for other parts of the state and the country.
Christine.
Well, I would encourage people to get involved in their local community with their mayor's councils and their mayor's groups and their city county councils and make an impact there, because that's really where the rubber hits the road insofar as business access, parks access, complete streets. Ordinances are being passed, as John was talking about, in Indianapolis. They've had several passed in other parts of the state. Every community could have a complete street ordinance. We do a lot of work on training advocates with disabilities, and also parents of children with disabilities. And I think that really empowers people once they know their rights and they've gotten a few skills under their belt and feel a little more comfortable voicing their opinion. I think we can get a lot more done. But there's just so much to do and so many people, so many communities that need that kind of awareness and that kind of effort. But, you know, you start with what you've got and then you go on from there. And I think we've made a lot of progress and hopefully we'll continue to do that. And if you want to join in the March Awareness Month process, mm-hmm. It's IndianaDisabilityAwareness.org. So okay.
Give that to them one more time.
IndianaDisabilityAwareness.org.
Okay. Emily, you get the last word on the subject here.
I want people to know that I, as a person with a disability, have a great life. I have a great family. I have 3 graduate degrees. I travel internationally. I'm an avid reader. I have a great life. Yes, there are challenges, but I'm not someone to be pitied. Just give me and people like me a chance. And when you do, I think you will see that people with disabilities are very loyal and very adaptive and have many skills to give. I think that rather than being someone who is dependent and receives care from others, I and other people with disabilities are interdependent. Yes, I receive help, but I also have the ability to share my gifts and skills with others. So when someone with a disability is given a chance to be a friend, be an employee, or volunteer, that they will give something of value to the person on the other side.
How often do you encounter, we're getting close on time, but you say people look at you with pity. How often do you encounter that, and what do you do about it? I realize it's not a fair question to ask with only 30 seconds or so.
I would say that sometimes pity is blatant. I've been patted on the head in restaurants and stuff, and other times there's underlying pity. People will try to befriend me and then later say something like, "Oh, if I were like you, I would rather be dead." That's horrible.
Yes.
And that's why I want people to know that life with a disability can be good.
Well, that, I think, will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Christine Dahlberg, Emily Munson, and John Barth, for what has been a lively and informative conversation. We will be back next Tuesday when we're going to be talking with author Alila Bundles about her great-grandmother, Madam C.J. Walker, and the Harlem Renaissance. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator Scott McAllister. Technical Producers Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.